Shanae Angola Jr., the podcast.
It's Shanae Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golick Jr., Amber Wilson filling in for Shanae Agwumike today. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We got Mike DiRocco coming up here as our training camp preview rolls along, the Jacksonville Jaguars in our sight here. Amber, you are in Florida. I never know if I'm saying Jaguar the right way here. I always get made fun of for this.
Are you a Jaguar or a Jaguire kind of guy?
What's the right way to say it? Like, I got the education last year, Amber, when I was calling Thursday night football games on App State, Appalachian State, learning how to pronounce that the right way here, because I know that's something that's near and dear to a lot of people, and I wanted to honor that. I feel like this one's less sensitive because it's the mascot, but I still don't know how to say Jag the right way.
What you do here, Mike, is the old pro move, Jags. They're the Jacksonville Jags. Then you don't have to worry about it. You never have to think about it. That's the pro move. Go with it.
There we go. Listen, Jags camp coming up in about 10 minutes here. We'll dive deep down inside, learning a lot as Amber shepherds me along this week. And Amber, we're going to try and learn even more tonight. We got Thursday night football coming up. The preseason rolls along. The New England Patriots and the Philadelphia Eagles, they've been doing joint practice this week, which we've seen from a lot of teams. And we've heard a lot about Jalen Hurts. There was even talk coming out of training camp that he was outshining Cam Newton and Mac Jones on the other side of the line here. So when you look at his situation, Amber, because you and I both think he's going to be the starter for this season, the Joe Flacco thing is not really much of a competition, but is he actually in a position to show anything this year? Because I look around at the rest of that roster and I'm not sure.
Well, I think he's in a position to show things in the sense that he's getting the opportunity to start at quarterback. I mean, that's where he's going to have to show out. They did bring in Devontae Smith. They've obviously tried to bring in some weapons. I know there's some health concerns there with Devontae Smith's knee here in training camp, but assuming that he's healthy, he does have some weapons and he does have some weapons to target. It's not the best O-line in the world, but it's an O-line that is going to be healthy. I mean, I think that O-line had everything to do with why Carson Wentz had such a rough year last year. And of course, they're now trying to move on from that era. So Jalen Hurts has an opportunity here. It's not the greatest opportunity in the world, but I don't think it's a terrible opportunity for him either. I mean, I do think he has enough on that team for them to be able to assess him. He doesn't have enough on that team to go win the division or go win a championship, fine, but he has enough on that team for them to be able to assess whether Jalen Hurts is their quarterback of the future, which is what this season is going to end up being about. And he's kind of found himself in that situation, and so have the Eagles, because they didn't plan on being in that situation when they drafted him in that second round. They didn't draft Jalen Hurts to be their quarterback of the future, but here they are, and right now he's their only hope until they move forward, whether that's with these Deshaun Watson rumors one day or whether that's looking back towards the draft to take somebody else. Joe Flacco is not going to ever be the answer, so there's no reason to give Joe Flacco a shot. I mean, you have to evaluate Jalen Hurts and see what you have.
Yeah, Amber, I think you're right, and we always remember how guys came into the league matters. Like, how the way an organization can view you matters. Because I know Nick Sirianni wasn't the coach, but Joe Douglas was the GM that drafted him. So it's not like a new regime came in and all of a sudden is evaluating everyone differently or looks at you like a hand-me-down. He was one of the guys, but you took him with that in mind. And so you're right. It's just trying to gauge what success looks like there. Because you mentioned Devontae Smith there that they brought the Heisman Trophy winner. Jalen Reagor, by all accounts, started off a little bit slow, but having a better camp right now. No one in that receiver room over 25, though. Zach Ertz still somehow on that roster after we all saw him on the sideline morose at the end of last season, thinking it was the end. The O-line's gotten healthier, but again, you look at the rest of that division, Amber, and right now, I mean, you'd have to slot the Eagles fourth if you were handicapping this going into the season, right?
Right, but that's not the point, because you don't need the Eagles to be better than that to evaluate Jalen Hurts. I mean, this is one of the reasons that Peterson's no longer there, right? Because we heard that they had a difference in philosophy between him and Lurie, and there's a difference in vision about wanting the franchise to go younger and focus on more rebuilding this team through the draft. This is going to be a different era for the Eagles than the one that we just saw that didn't end up panning out with Carson Wentz. Like, they're trying to move on from that time, and in order to do that, they have to evaluate what they have in Jalen Hurts, and I don't think you need to be first in your division in order to be able to do that. I don't think they need to win anything significant this year to know what they have in him. I mean, he made four starts last season. You saw glimpses there, like that were surprising, I think, to some of us because, hey, he was drafted 53rd. So I feel like the bar is kind of low compared to most quarterbacks that we see drafted in the first round who find themselves in this position in their rookie season. You saw glimpses of hope. He'll get the full season, I believe, this season to show what he really has. And then the Eagles can evaluate where they need to go from there. Like, he's not the answer that they were looking for, but maybe there's an answer here that they found.
Chenan Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golick Jr. and Amber Wilson. And it just, you know what it is? It's I'm having a tough time wrapping my mind around what success would have to look like for him to keep this job, Amber, because I just look back at the situation within this division at Dak Prescott and how above and beyond he had to go. Now, we can say part of this was Jerry Jones, but, I mean, listen, that guy, we watched him dole out payday to plenty of guys, but especially at the quarterback spot when you're not one of the team's first-round draft picks, I feel like the bar, like, you got to do twice as much, it feels like, to go out and accomplish enough for them to want you to stick and not to start looking for your replacement. I mean, you know this. We talked about this before the show. Unless you were an organization's first-round pick, they're almost always looking to replace you if they can.
And sometimes when you're a first-round pick or the pick in the draft, they're also looking to replace you if they can. You have to show off early, obviously, in the NFL. And if they don't have first-round pick money invested in you, then they're going to be quicker to move on from you. So you're absolutely right in that sense. It just depends where they're going to go, though. Like, what are we talking about in terms of what he needs to do? If we're talking about these rumors with Deshaun Watson, and obviously that's a really complicated situation. If we're looking at it just the football component of this, I don't think there's anything he's going to do in this year that's going to make them feel like he's going to be better than Deshaun Watson, right? Like, Deshaun Watson's such an elite quarterback that if he didn't have the legal woes and the Eagles had an opportunity to trade for him, then they're probably going to do that as quickly as they can. But if you're talking about what Jalen Hurts can do so that the Eagles don't look towards the draft or so that they at least give him a couple more years at the starting position, even if maybe they do draft somebody, maybe they draft somebody in a later round and they give Jalen some more time, I do think that that is a realistic possibility. So part of this equation is where the Eagles can go in evaluating what Jalen Hurts does this season. But either way, right now, he's the answer because they ain't got nothing else. And Joe Flacco's definitely not a future answer.
It's so interesting. Again, you're right. All the circumstances make this a very clear picture of a 1 week, 1 year sample size. And looking back at last year and the games that he started, we know the expectations kind of got thrown into a wonky spot after that win versus the Saints, where he goes out and performs well. The statistics don't blow you away, but he led a win against a team in New Orleans that a lot of people looked at that time as one of the best in the NFC. And then he goes out after that, and it's losses to end the year, but back-to-back games over throwing for over 300 yards. We know the dual threat capability. And Amber, I mean, we just finished up with the fantasy marathon yesterday. There's a lot of people that looked at Jalen Hurts as a draftable quarterback because of that dual threat ability in the world of fantasy. We know it's not the same as reality, but it does underscore, like, all right, this guy does have a lot of ability that we've talked about here. I just don't know if provided, because we also know, right, wrong, or indifferent, we're not saying that this team is capable of going out and winning, nor should we expect it, but that generally tends to be how we kind of decide a lot of guys' futures in all of this. And I just feel like if they go out here and Jalen Hurts plays good and doesn't blow anyone away, and this team is a 500 team or right around there, then it's on to the next one when we start next season.
If they have a next one to move on to. I think that really ends up becoming the question. Last season, it's funny because you keep referencing where he was drafted, and that does matter in this evaluation, even if it shouldn't, because last season he comes in, they expected Carson Wentz to be their guy. Wentz has such a terrible season. They end up going to Jalen Hurts, and so it was like anything Jalen did that was good, it was going to be surprising, and maybe it would seem better than it actually was because none of us really expected it, because he's the 53rd draft pick, not the third draft pick. So it's a different evaluation process. But when you're talking about an entire season this season, some of that surprise is going to wear off. So if he does something good, I think it'll just either seem good. I don't think it'll seem overinflated good, in other words. So I feel like we'll have a better sense of how to evaluate him because the expectations are different when we're talking about a full season.
And when we're talking about, because you're right, the most popular guy on any team, on any program, young backup quarterback. Like, when you got a guy there that you've drafted that's got a little bit of potential, he's the most popular guy in any city, and then he comes in, you've got a little bit of hope there, you've got the, you know, future that seems unknown, Now that gives way to not having that comparison right around there. So we'll get to see even more Jalen Hurts tonight, which we're very excited about. And he's not a rookie, but he's one of these young quarterbacks that we got our eyes on. Coming up next, let's head to camp with the one at the top. Number one overall pick, Trevor Lawrence, and what the 2021 outlook looks
just
like.
Say Jags.
Yeah, Jags get next on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Amber, one of my favorite parts about training camp is just the constant stream of tweet updates about like so-and-so going 4-for-4 and 7-on-7, or like one random clip of Will Hernandez with the Giants winning a 1-on-1. That and the endless stream of Dan Campbell quotes here. Janae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Amber Wilson. Because Amber, we saw the other day for the Lions, they cut their longtime long snapper, Don Mulbach, on his 40th birthday. This is a guy that had been around there, well-respected veteran special teams player in this league. And when asked about it, the head coach, Dan Campbell, said, "There's no way to sugarcoat that. I'm a bleep hole. That's about the best way to put it. And I hate it." Like, is he saying that because he cut him on his birthday? Would he have, did he not know it was his birthday? I'm not sure how that went down necessarily.
I mean, in fairness, I guess cutting anybody kind of makes you one of those, but it is a nature of the game, right? So it is what it is. Being cut on your birthday, though, or being fired on your birthday generally seems like a really bad break. I'm very familiar with the Man Campbell experience down here in Miami.
Yes.
And the quotes are gems. Let's just leave it at that.
That is true. We will enjoy the ride as it goes along here with Man Campbell. But that's not who we're here to talk about, because it's our training camp previews. Three and out, the three biggest questions facing every NFL team heading into the upcoming season. And so as we go through the AFC South, we already went through the Houston Texans. And so, Cliff, it's time to hit the music.
The Jacksonville Jaguars.
The Jags, as I learned from Amber. I'm not going to worry about how I say that word. And so to help us with the Jags, we head to the Goodyear Hotline, where Mike DiRocco, the ESPN Jags reporter, joins us on the Goodyear Hotline. Let's get to the first question, Cliff.
Number three.
Mike, I was a little taken aback when I saw that offensive coordinator Daryl Bevel said on Tuesday that Trevor Lawrence will probably start Monday night against the Saints, but mentions there's still a QB battle between Lawrence and Gardner Minshew. Is there really?
No, not really. I would be stunned if Trevor Lawrence isn't the starter for the September 12 opener against Houston. I mean, let's be honest, that the minute the Jaguars secured that first overall pick back in December, he was the starting quarterback going into this season. I understand what Urban's doing. He's trying to create some competition and trying to make sure that rookies realize no one is handed anything, even a guy like Trevor Lawrence. But when everything's said and done, he's going to be taking that first snap against the Texans.
We all know that. I'm guessing Trevor probably does too. But a last hit, Cliff, give me number two.
Number two.
So reportedly, the Jags are shopping C.J. Henderson ahead of this season. The cornerback, though, he played more than two dozen snaps in the team's preseason opener. So tell me, why would the Jags consider trading Henderson?
Yeah, there was some concerns about whether he wanted to play football and whether his desire to play football was where it needed to be. But they've apparently figured that out, and the answer is yes to both. And he's been really good since he came back to practice. He hasn't missed since he returned. Now, he was dealing with COVID, and it was a long battle for him to get back and get acclimated again. But he's found his stride, and he's been working with the ones ever since last week. And he looked good in that preseason opener. So they really like him as their number one corner alongside Shaq Griffin. So I think it would take a pretty good offer at this point to get C.J. Henderson out of there.
You mentioned Shaq Griffin, an important acquisition for this team. Lots of young talent on that defense, which leads us to our last question here. Cliff, let's get number one.
Number one.
Because they do have a young team in a lot of areas, and they've also got a head coach in Urban Meyer who's making his first foray into the professional game. And it started off, we know there was a lot of headlines around the hiring and then letting go of Chris Doyle, the former strength coach at Iowa, and then the decision to bring on Tim Tebow, who they just recently let go of here. So, Mike, after a rocky start, what it felt like for Urban Meyer, has he steadied the ship here? What has his coaching tenure looked like in the football sense of things?
Well, I'll say this. The players have bought in 100%. Everyone that we've talked to, when I've talked to other people, too, in the organization, and they said there's a complete buy-in. You know, one of the things that Urban has done is committed everything in his power to these guys, and he convinced the owner to spend $1.5 million, I think it was, on a recovery area that wasn't at the stadium before. If these guys wanted cryotherapy or massage or cupping or anything like that, they had to leave the facility and go pay for it themselves. He's now got that for them in the facility, saving them a ton of money. They can get all that treatment there. You know, and I've several players have told us that, look, you know, he's given us everything we need to be successful. Now we have to repay him back. So they are all in on Urban Meyer at this point. But we haven't seen any games. We haven't seen any wins or losses. We haven't seen any issues yet on the field. So that still remains to be seen. But right now they've got complete buy-in, and that's kind of a good thing for the Jags at this point, because they need some kind of positivity after last season.
It's all you can really ask for at this point in the season. Mike, we appreciate you helping us out. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Amber, that is an interesting kind of thing with you there mentioning, getting the kind of facilities upgrade there, because honestly, it's a very college thing, right? Normally, and I remember when I was coming out of college, I was talking to one of my buddies who was playing in the NFL, and he's like, yeah, at that point, this was 2013, he's like, they don't gotta beef you up with facilities like they do in college. They're paying you money to be here. You're
right.
A professional.
It's a job.
So they're not worried about that. Like, now, we do see in a lot of places now, we started to see the stadiums be renovated. Facilities kind of get upgraded to an extent, but this is very much out of the college playbook of, we're going to give you a one-stop shop right here for all the stuff you need.
Yeah, and normally when you see the stadium renovations and whatnot, really the focus there obviously is on the fan experience and not so much the player experience. You're absolutely right. It differs very much from college, because you're not trying to talk anybody into coming to your organization through recruiting. You are paying them to come to your organization. So there's a different level of incentive there anyways. Interesting strategy, though. I mean, you would like, if workplaces, of course, cared about the environment beyond just the paycheck that they give to their employees. But when you're talking about a league that's built on contracts and built on lots of money, then it's kind of a different scenario than most of us when we're considering where we're going to go to work. And then maybe we do actually take into account the facilities or the layout of the office. So it's a weird thing playing in the NFL, but I guess they're taking the college approach.
You know what? They're taking an approach, as Mike mentioned there, to try and just get guys bought in. It's the first at college, high school, pro, whatever it is, getting the team to believe what the coach is selling you. That's half the battle. The next step is the results, and we'll see how those look in Jacksonville. So again, our cruise to the AFC South as we get ready for this preseason hits home with the Jags. Coming up next, though, the Washington Post had a very interesting feature they just put out here. They spent this baseball season examining the experience of 9 different African-American ballplayers ranging in age from 90 to 18, taking the temperature on how they've seen and experienced Major League Baseball. And the results tell us a lot about the direction the sport is going with African-American players. We'll get to that next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Jhené and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Amber Wilson filling in for Jhené today. Coming up next, we will celebrate the hometown kids doing right in the world of baseball. I am very excited to gloat on behalf of one of my favorite teams coming up in just a few minutes here. But we mentioned at the end of the last segment here, the Washington Post did a great article called The Nine, documenting the cases and the life histories, the really experiences of 9 different African-American baseball players, some former as old as 90 years old, some current prospects as young as 18 here, to try and assess their experience with the sport, what it's looked like and why we've seen a decline in African-American players in Major League Baseball. And Michael Lee, the Washington Post Sports Enterprise reporter, was one of the authors, a part of this. Michael, we appreciate you giving us some time today. It's a great article. There's 9 different pieces. We know you took a look closely at Tim Anderson here, but some of the names for people that haven't seen this yet, Willie Mays, Ken Griffey Jr., CeCe Sabathia, Bruce Maxwell, Bo Jackson here. What went into the choices made about the particular players you guys were going to talk to?
Well, originally the concept was just to try to find, you know, 9 players. Dave Shine, my colleague, is the one who came up with the idea just from conversations that we had had of just about just black players and just the decline in baseball. And obviously with the Major League Baseball saying that they would, you know, elevate the Negro Leagues in their statistics, it was sort of just a perfect time to sort of examine, you know, where baseball stood. And the kind of the way to tell the story, we just decided that it's best to tell 9 stories, 9 unique stories, a player in his 90s, a player in his 80s, a player in his 70s, a player in his 50s, 40s, 30s, you know, all the way down the line into the teens, and just sort of talk about just this sort of timeline of black baseball players. And Willie Mays obviously just turned 90 this year, was the perfect choice for 90. And so we just try to find players in each age group that sort of, you know, match the eras. And obviously Vida Blue was important because he sort of embodied that period that in the 70s, but also the drug era that sort of derailed a lot of black players during that time. And so we just try to pick different players who embodied their era. And so when it came to the 20-year-old, the guy in the 20s, it was Tim Anderson to me because he's sort of the face of baseball in a lot of ways, you know, just not just black baseball, but just as a baseball player. And he has just a unique story as somebody who just came up playing casually and all of a sudden becomes an all-star, which is just really impossible to do nowadays with, you know, travel ball and so much money that needs to be invested to become an elite baseball player. So he's just a unique story because he chose baseball at a time when a lot of people don't. And so we just try to just examine, you know, different, you know, points throughout the history of black ball players and just try to find the best examples from each age group.
Now, the piece starts by saying an examination of the history of the game through these specific 9 players will tell us all something about the game and about the country generally. For your part, because really this was an entire staff effort here with the Washington Post sports staff, but for your part with Tim Anderson, was there anything that you learned in doing this piece that surprised you or maybe that you didn't expect to learn about either of those things, the game or the country?
I think the one thing that this struck me was just how isolated the game can feel, you know, for a black player. Last year he was the only African-American player on the White Sox. This year there are 3, but last year he was the only guy. And, you know, he kind of said that, you know, it's tough to go in the locker room and not have anybody you can, you know, really just confide in or really discuss different topics with. And so I was pleased that he shared that with me, but I think that's something that a lot of people don't really consider is that if there's something that, you know, you want to, you know, discuss or something that frustrates you about either the way you're being treated or just something, you can't really vent to everybody. And so, you know, he winds up, you know, talking to his friends and his wife and just, you know, close people around him, but there aren't necessarily teammates that he can confide in about certain issues. That doesn't mean he's isolated and by himself, though. I mean, he's the life, you know, engine of that team. I mean, he's the guy that provides a spark, and Tony La Russa gives him credit for being a leader and someone who connects with everybody because he just wants to win and he wants to compete, and his energy is contagious. And, you know, just the fact that he came up playing baseball just for the fun of it. He doesn't understand all the unwritten rules about taunting and being flamboyant and just having fun with it. And I just love the fact that he just said that, you know, this is a hard game to play. Like, this is a difficult game. Like, you know, you fail all the time. So when you actually succeed, you should really enjoy it. And I think it's just a great attitude to have. And there's so many people that try to just say or act like you've been there before and all this other stuff. And like, no, this should be fun. Like, if you do something that few people can do and you do it great, you should be able to flaunt it and enjoy yourself. And I think that's, it just comes from just his mentality, you know, just his life story and just his journey that it's just, this is a fun game. We should try to have fun with it and not just try to stick to some unwritten rules that nobody really needs to stick to.
Michael Lee with us from the Washington Post. And Michael, you guys mentioned spanning all these different generations. to try and also find out more about why we've gotten to a place where black players who once made up as much as a fifth of major league rosters now make up less than 8%. You mentioned that isolation that Tim Anderson and others have felt, but how did we get to that point now where we have lost out on so many black players representing in the sport?
Yeah, and so I think that, you know, Glenn Hill's piece that sort of looked at Bo Jackson and just how, you know, he was an elite football player, Heisman Trophy winner, who wanted to play baseball so badly that he chose to play both sports and inevitably wound up playing baseball longer than he did football, of course, because of injury. But, you know, looking at the 1989 All-Star game and just like guys like Dave Stewart, and there were so many black players represented on the field, and that sort of was like a benchmark, sort of the high point for black representation in baseball, because it started to decline shortly after that. But there came a point where now you see guys like Kyler Murray or Patrick Mahomes or somebody who could have had, or Russell Wilson, who could have had success in baseball. Now there's an alternative there for quicker money with football. And you also have the chance to play an elite position and be admired by a whole community, you know, in a different way. So I think with, you know, different avenues for football and basketball, you know, quicker money. But also, you know, there's just the game itself has sort of opened up more doors for Latin American players and more opportunities for them. It's expensive to play baseball nowadays. And so there are so many factors that have sort of led players away from the game. But we just sort of just wanted to tell these 9 unique stories to just sort of just tell what's happened over time through these guys and sort of let you sort of figure it out for yourself too.
Washington Post Sports Enterprise reporter Michael Lee joining us. I want to go back to your piece on Tim Anderson for a second, because you mentioned that he balks at the unwritten rules of baseball. I love that he brings personality to the game, but I'm curious, do you think Anderson embodies the direction that baseball is going generally? Do you think that it is trending that direction, or do you think we still have a long way to go?
I think we have a ways to go. I think baseball is sort of having this internal battle, you know, because you can see like they had the Field of Dream game where they want to just kind of go back to the past and just, you know, go back to just the history of the game. But then you also see like a guy like Fernando Tatis, and you see, you know, Pete Alonso winning the home run derby, and they put the big, you know, champion chain on his neck. And so you can sort of see that flamboyance now kind of being embraced by the league and let them play. And, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. is now, you know, in this role where he's trying to make baseball seem cool, and he did it. And I think one of the best parts about the Ken Griffey piece is that, you know, LeBron James is in there quoted discussing, you know, just how cool Ken Griffey was to him, and just how he met with him, you know, before he entered the NBA, and just the influence that he had. And so there's an element of cool that's lacking from baseball. And now you sort of see that they sort of realize they can't just hold on to its past forever. They have to start embracing the present and the future. And so I think that there is a push for that, but then you can sort of see it just with this year with the White Sox in general. You know, when Mercedes hit the home run off of the 3-0 pitch, you know, and then Tony La Russa's right there saying, you know, whatever Minnesota wants to do to retaliate, I'm okay with it. You know, and he's saying it, he's, you know, older, you know, coach, you know, kind of old school coach. And so even within his own team, you know, you can sort of see that there's a little bit of a conflict there. But I think that baseball is just sort of just having this internal struggle now to figure out which direction it wants to go. I think inevitably the Tim Anderson way is going to be the way that everyone kind of accepts, because again, guys, this younger generation, they want to have fun. They see what, you know, what NBA players are doing. They see what, you know, everyone else is doing, and they want to share in that experience. And so if baseball wants to, you know, have a future, it has to embrace, you know, where the game is headed.
The piece is called The Nine. Again, the Washington Post examining the experience of 9 different African-American players from various ages, from various eras, learning what they can tell us about the game and the country. And Michael Lee, one of the great writers from the Washington Post, on that piece. Michael, we appreciate the time. Everyone, make sure you check this out. Hopefully we can talk to you again soon.
Oh, for sure. Thank you, and thanks for having me on.
Awesome stuff there. Really a fascinating look. A lot of layers to this piece that can give you a real good sense of where we've been and where we're going. Coming up next, though, I get to do a little bit of gloating on behalf of baseball in Connecticut. I'll explain next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
As a fan, this is amazing. This is the time of the year.
This is what we talked about. This is real, man.
This is real.
Are you ready? Because I'm ready.
This is Marty Smith, and I'm ready.
This is Max Kellerman, and the Giants are ready.
This is Keyshawn Johnson. The Carolina Panthers are ready.
Zelin Han, I'm ready.
Football is back, and it kicks off every morning with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, and continues all day right here on ESPN Radio. Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
And Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, Sirius XM Channel 80. Mike Golic Jr., Amber Wilson, kind enough to fill in with us this week here, hanging out for Chinea Gwumike here. She is one of many great friends we've had stop by around here. Our thanks to Lance Zierlein for helping us preview the Houston Texans training camp. Mike DiRocco, our ESPN Jags reporter, as well, as we roll along with Three and Out. Ryan Clark, our ESPN NFL and MMA analyst here, co-host of the DC and RC podcast. And Michael Lee from the Washington Post, who just stopped by, part of an article called The Nine, documenting the experiences of different black players throughout the history of Major League Baseball. You missed any of those conversations, make sure you head over, download, subscribe, rate, and review the Chinea and Golic Jr. podcast wherever you get your podcast. But if we're talking baseball, it's time for me to do some hometown gloating. Let's keep that same energy. We want to be a jolt of energy.
Yeah, the energy level was really high there.
And now we want to keep that same energy going.
Keeping that same energy.
Keep that same energy.
You could just sense that there was a tremendous amount of energy.
With Chinea and Golic Jr.
Keep that same energy is brought to you by Indeed. Hire right now. Visit Indeed.com/credit. And Amber, keeping that same energy, how surprised are we that we've still got these kind of moments coming out of Major League Baseball? White Sox pitcher Lance Lynn was ejected after tossing his belt at umpires during the foreign substance check going on at the mound.
This is such childish behavior. And honestly, I don't understand it at this point, because y'all knew the crackdown was coming. They told you that before the season even started. And here we are so far into the season, and we're still dealing with these temper tantrums like these baseball players are three-year-olds. In fact, I think my two-year-old son would have not even done this. I don't understand it, Mike. Like, what is so emotional, man, about getting checks? Like, you know this is now part of the game. They're trying to crack down on the sticky stuff. Just cough up your belt. They're gonna check your belt, dude.
It was funny for a while. I will say, I was listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney, and he mentioned that was this first umpire. It was a young umpire, first career ejection. So maybe you're Lance. It's like, listen, Lance is built like me. He's a bigger guy out there. It's a hot night. You're at a higher pitch count than you expected already at this point in the game. It just seemed like his frustrations got aimed in the wrong direction. Who among us hasn't been warm and uncomfortable in the summer air? No, just me?
Do you throw your belt?
I don't usually wear a ton of belts. I like pants that, I mean, listen.
Belts are really highly uncomfortable. Like, oh. I mean, what? Like, we're playing a sport where we wear belts. It's honestly ridiculous, but that's an entirely different conversation if we want to go into belts and baseball.
Amber, one of the greatest instances of sport is when they switched away in football pants from the belts to just drawstrings. It was so long overdue. I hate belts. As a guy who's had a belly my entire life, they just dig into you. It's just not fun.
They're not holding up your pants. Everybody's pants stay up without a belt. Like, when was the last time we actually needed a belt to hold up pants? It's 2021, people.
Let's move to a suspenders world in 2021. But keeping that same energy, I got to get to the important stuff around here, because we have had a beautiful, beautiful stat that came live earlier, courtesy of Odyssey Sports. Amber, the Hartford Yard Goats, the hometown team here in Connecticut, the AA affiliate of the Colorado Rockies, drew more fans on Tuesday night than the Marlins or the Rays. What do you have to say on behalf of Florida baseball, Amber?
Hartford Yard Goats baseball is above my pay grade expertise-wise. So I don't know much about the Hartford Yard Goats. However, if they have not had the roster turnover, and if they have owners who are willing to spend any semblance of money, and if they have decent ownership, and if they haven't talked their city into using tax dollars to fund a ballpark, if they haven't done any of those things, then I understand why they have better attendance than the Marlins, because the Marlins situation, let's just say they haven't given their fans much of a reason to show up, and they kind of continue to do that even under this new leadership group. Now, the Rays, on the other hand, this is kind of embarrassing for the Rays. Like, I have a hard time defending the Rays fan here, because that's a really darn good organization and a really darn good team. Man, show up. Come on.
Get out to the trop. What are you guys doing here? I will say, as far as what Dunkin' Donuts Park is giving the fans, which, again, voted back-to-back years the number one park
in Dunkin' Donuts
baseball,
Park, I mean, first of all.
They put chicken and munchkins on a skewer and let you eat them both at once here. It doesn't get much better than that. Respect the yard when you come up to Connecticut. Respect Spain and Fitz. They're up next.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.